and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 518. My name's James Gilmore. Joining me today is Dan Sullivan.
Hello.
I hope everybody is well out there in this extremely unpleasantly hot climate. I'm going to complain about the weather again. It's gone all hot here. And if you're in the States, you might go 28 degrees Celsius. What's that? That's nothing. But you see, our houses in the UK, they're built to keep all the heat in.
Yeah.
And they don't have any air conditioning.
No.
So when it does get up to those nice kind of Californian temperatures over here, we all just sweat until there's no more liquid in our body and then we die.
Yeah, that's it. And then when we're sweating as well, they ban hose pipes.
Yes, that's
over
also
here
true.
As well. So that, yeah, you definitely can't just sit in the garden just spraying the hose pipe over yourself.
No, because there's no water in us. There's no water in our taps. There's no water anywhere. It's a whole grand old thing. But it is nice to see the sun again, and we hope everybody is well. I know people are starting to venture outside a little bit more, despite mixed messaging, let's say, in the UK. But it's so difficult to give any advice on this because all the advice contradicts itself.
Yep.
Just keep your distance and stay safe and continue to try and be sensible about this. And hopefully we won't get locked back inside in a month when it all kicks off again. Anyway, we've actually got loads to talk about today, and Dan has got kind of an out point, so we have to try and we're going to race through a whole bunch of stuff and condense it in nice, tight format as much as we can. So, we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of news, including all the spec info on iOS 14 and when you can expect it. We've got information about Launchpad, our upcoming mobile event, where we're going to be bringing you all the newest digital revelations from new games and stuff live for the first time and exclusive. We've got a new Pokemon MOBA appearing, Don't Starve, there's a new mobile version of that appearing as well. Plus, a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Pokemon Cafe Mix, Pascal's Wager, Death Comes True, The Innsmouth Case, and lots more. But first, it's the news. iOS 14, it's on the way. It's coming to a device near you soon, provided you've got an iPhone or an iPad. These updates can be good news because sometimes they'll get rid of old archaic features or improve new ones. They can sometimes be bad news because the updates can often be quite heavy, and maybe you're using an older device and you download the brand new update and all of a sudden your phone slows to a crawl and you can't use it anymore. And then you think, maybe I should get a new iPhone. And you go, that's how they get you! But, you know, it's going to come no matter what we do, so we better cover it. And from taking a look at what they've decided to include in this new stuff, what I'm getting from this, Dan, the big vibe I'm getting is Android.
Well, whenever we see a new features list for Apple devices, they tend to give off that feeling anyway. I definitely see a lot of kind of like whenever there's a new iPhone announcement and they talk about new features, I see a lot of Android users online go, yeah, this is a cool new feature 2 years ago.
Yes, there's so lots of that
There's definitely a lot of that. So if they're closing the gap, I guess that's good. But
yeah.
Apple have always been about security and securing their own ecosystem. So it makes sense that like Nintendo, they're a little bit slower because of that.
They are much more cagey about it. This one seems to be leaning much more towards the idea of customization, of allowing you to move things and place things on your home screen, to put custom widgets in there, all that kind of stuff, which, again, on Android, people have been doing since year dot, but on iOS, as you know, you can certainly move icons around your different screens, but you can't necessarily like make sure that some stay at the bottom and some stay at the top with a gap in the middle. No, they've all got a flow in that nice, neat little line, and they've had those particular rules in place since the beginning, and they've been very reluctant to let you mess with their look. They want their device to look a certain way, and they don't want you to go ahead ruining it with your shuffling and all that business. But now it seems to be that they're relaxing the chains a little bit. So there's something called a smart stack, which allows you to store widgets and swipe through all of them without going to a different window. This actually leads into another advancement, which is that they seem to be really leaning into the whole picture-in-picture, do multiple things while keeping other apps open vibe. So, for example, when calls come in or calls from other apps come in, if WhatsApp calls and things like that, there'll be tiny little drop-downs that appear at the top or the side or something while you're still doing your business. They won't have that occupying the whole screen thing where it just completely overtakes the display.
Yeah.
And you'll get full proper picture in picture. So they did a little demo where someone was watching on Apple TV and it goes into picture in picture as you start to interact with other apps. That's kind of been there in the iPad OS for a while because they are different, you know, iOS 14 and iPad OS. And I think they're bringing that more into the mobile version as well. More compact Siri. See, I never use Siri, right? But apparently Siri would, again, take up the whole screen when you used her. And she'd, you know, bloop, what do you want? And now that's going to become a little tiny top of the screen, like bloop, indication that she's working whilst letting you carry on with your other business. And they're doing their own Translate app.
Okay.
I mean, I use the Google one because I'm an Android boy, but being someone who visits Colombia a bunch and a wife who has Spanish for a first language, I am maybe slightly ashamed to admit that I use the Translate app more than I probably should to work out what's going on in my life. Do you use iOS or Android? What's your handset, Dan?
I've been Android historically. I've switched over to iOS this year, actually.
Okay, so, all right then. How have you found that going from one to the other?
It was actually a lot easier than it was the last time I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
So back when the iPad 2 first launched, I picked up an iPad for work at the time, for what I was when I was getting started in games journalism. And the idea was I could use it like a laptop, and it felt like a massive gulf, a massive change between Android and iOS. But this time it was almost seamless, to be honest. And must have been January this year that I switched over, and not too much of a difference. Still got a couple of Android devices around the house just in case I want to download some other stuff. But they've clearly done a lot of quality of life work over the last however many years it's been to try and bring the two closer together. Be that Google doing the quality of life stuff or Apple doing it. But it's definitely they're a lot closer to each other now than they were once.
I think it's more essential to their survival at this point, because I get the feeling that, not that it's stagnated over there in the Apple camp, but I think that people have found that there's less and less reason maybe to stick with Apple, or perhaps the shine's worn off slightly and Google's become so popular and actually quite good to use when at the beginning it was fairly ropey. So I think there's more reason for them to try and like compete and maybe open things up more than they'd initially like to and say, all right, then customize your stuff if you want.
As someone who used to use, I originally used HTC a lot.
Oh yeah.
Dabbled with Samsung, and then I had Huawei phones until recently. And they do all have their own like power and app management tools on them.
Yeah.
Which can mean that the Google devices slow down or age differently. Mm. And I spent a lot of time working with a lot of people who swore by Apple devices, and I know a lot of people who swear by Android devices. And you're just hearing the same arguments really over time, but people like Apple because it's got that ecosystem, because they made their own apps, because they control what you can and can't do. But then you hear people with Android go, yeah, but you can get basically anything for free on it if you know how. And you know, and so as Android becomes more accessible and the average person becomes more tech savvy, we don't need those guardrails up or those, you know, accessibility tools to make an iPhone that makes an iPhone easy to use for anybody, even if you're terrified of phones. And Google and you know, Android is a lot more accessible now anyway than it was. Whereas first Android would have been much more daunting than Apple.
Yes. It's certainly like the avalanche of options that you're given, and hey, engage developer mode and all that kind of stuff might seem a little bit like, huh? If you just want to press the thing and have your messages appear.
Yeah.
And in terms of, you're talking about power management, and you're right that everyone will like skin the stock Android with a different type. Like, you know, Samsung used to do their TouchWiz. I don't know what it's called now, or TouchSense or something like that. But everyone has their own little version. It's MUIU on the phones that I use, because I've got those Redmi Notes.
Oh, okay,
that's their version of it. But anything that, well, I haven't seen one on iOS, and it's because it does it for you.
Yeah.
It is always running in the background, and it's like the last, it allows like you to open a certain number of apps, and then the oldest one gets closed when you open the new one to maintain the balance. So like it is actually doing that stuff, but it's doing it cleverly behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So while you think maybe, oh, there isn't an option for me to manage it, it's like, well, no, it's because it's doing it already.
Yeah.
The actual update itself can be downloaded. It'll probably be around September, but be wary. It's only from iPhone 6S and 6S Plus upwards. So if you are running a 5 or a 5S, then you're going to be out of the loop on this one. Don't even try and download it. And based on previous experience, if you have got a 6S, maybe check and see when it comes out how other people have reacted to it running the same device, because I have had to roll back an update on one of my iPhones because it's like it just reduced the phone operation to sludge. It was impossible to use the damn thing because, yeah, it's like technically I could use it, but no, the processor could not hack it. So I just rolled back and it was much smoother. So keep that in mind. But we'll keep you updated. And obviously the same thing is coming over to iPad with a few more differences. If you want the full skinny on what they're offering, then go over and check out Pocket Gamer Biz, where we've got a couple of articles which go into kind of more nitty gritty detail with it all. But yes, keep your eyes peeled for that one. Now we're going to segue into something that we are doing ourselves and something that you spearheaded, Dan. This was your idea / fault. Pocket Gamer Launchpad, Dan, what's that all about?
Yeah, that's exciting. Okay, so yeah, we're working on Pocket Gamer Launchpad at the moment. The idea being that when everyone was cancelling down E3 and all of these other events because of COVID-19, a lot of people were saying, like, what will happen in place of this? And before those talks started happening, we had an idea, which was, nobody's actually doing, you know, when we have E3 and when we have the Game Awards and when we have these big announcement events, and even when we have these big physical events like Gamescom and EGX and REST, there's not really a space for mobile. And as many people know, when you get a hardcore PC audience or when you get a console audience in the same place as mobile as well, it tends to get instantly dismissed. So it was like, how do we show what's good for mobile, what's coming up, and how do we almost create a little hype circuit for it? You know, with E3, sometimes we'll see games that aren't coming out for 18 months. And yeah, that's because the development cycle on some games is a lot longer than on mobile. But it gives us the time to get excited about something before it comes out. And we don't really have that in mobile. We sometimes get a 2 or 3 month lead. Unless it's something coming out of like Tencent, for instance, or Nintendo.
Development time is often a little bit quicker. Not necessarily with the big games, but yeah, and it tends to roll out a little bit softer. But you're right, I've been at E3s where they're showing a game off and everyone's going, ooh, 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 and then it comes up at the end, like coming to mobile, and everyone goes,
ah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's the reaction. Obviously, I understand why in some cases, because maybe you're hyped for a console game, but sometimes it can be just the unfair dismissal of a platform which has got incredibly good games on so that's what we're sort of spotlighting, isn't it?
That's it. So the goal of Launchpad is to create a 3-day event where we just have big news, big exclusive news of new games, of major updates, of kind of development roadmaps, of new trailers about new content for mobile games, for the games that we're probably going to be talking about as a site for the next 2-3 months. And it's just a way to start that conversation.
So we're going to have exclusive articles going up. We're going to be talking to and working with loads of developers who are going to effectively like reveal their games or reveal new updates for their games for the first time. We're going to be, in addition to all the stories and the videos and the trailers we'll be posting for the first time, we're going to do a daily show that goes with it. So we'll be going up on Switch and also on YouTube as well in video capacity. So I'll be basically talking to a bunch of the developers. I'll be playing the games or showing the trailers for the first time and just making a little bit of a thing out of it. Because, yeah we're not going to get the E3. We're not going to get the Gamescom and that. And it seems a shame to just go, well, all the consoles and the PC are doing their thing and there's nothing for mobile. So that's where we step in. Hopefully it's going to be great. I have every hope in it. But July 23rd to July 25th, that's when it's going to be running. And if you want to either mark it in your calendar to turn up and watch it and check out all the new stuff, or even if you're a developer and you're interested in getting involved and you want to reveal something yourself, maybe head over to pocketgamer.com/launchpad and you'll find all the information and contact details over there. It'll be good. We do events for a thing, have done for years. They're all right. Come and join. Get involved.
I think this is the first digital mobile games event. And I think it might actually be the first mobile games specifically like event for players who play games rather than, obviously, we run a lot of business ones.
So this is for you guys listening. So come and get involved. Now, talking about big gaming announcements, we had a bunch of Nintendo things that were mentioned. We're going to be talking about a Pokemon game in a second, but first, Pokemon Unite got announced with a little bit of gameplay. This is from Tencent and Timmy Studios, which I believe are the guys who also work on PUBG Mobile and Call of Duty Mobile.
Yeah, Timmy are very busy. Very busy mobile developers. So.
Aren't they, though? And so this is the mobile MOBA version of Pokemon. It looks, this is looks like much more of a League of Legends-y sort of thing than a Clash Royale, for example, based on the gameplay. But it's going to be 5v5 matches. It's going to be available on mobile and Nintendo Switch. There is a gameplay trailer. Gameplay trailer is a bit generous. There's about maybe 10 seconds in the whole minute. Most of it's kind of FMV and, you know, business. But they do show the thing in action. And when you pull back and see the whole map, it is that classic oval with the, you know, the two tracks, top and bottom, then one down the center and then the thing in the middle. And yeah, I was getting big Vainglory Dota vibes off of it. And it's doing the kind of camera at the three-quarter angle thing as well, rather than straight down. So definitely more like that than anything super, super light. But that said, I'm sure the fact that it's on Switch and it's on mobile, it'll have concessions. Apparently, it's going to be strict time limits, catching as many Pokemon out in the wild as you can. Whoever has the highest score at the end will be declared the winner. And then you build your roster, you level up, you unlock new moves, and then you can customize your skill sets accordingly, which is different from a standard MOBA. It's not just like kicking the crap out of people. There's the capture aspect as well. You're a Switch guy, right?
No, not really.
No? Okay.
I play mobile.
We're on Pokemon.
I used to enjoy Pokemon a fair bit. I've not played the last probably two or three issuings properly. I was working in retail, I was the person that used to kind of do them 100% and catch every Pokemon available in that version and import all the Pokemon from the previous one to have a full Pokedex. So I was pretty serious about that. But I think about the time that they rolled out the subscription-based Pokemon Bank that allowed you to transfer them between generations, I was like, something's changed.
It's a bridge too far, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm quite interested in this. I think the Pokemon IP can be used for good rather than evil. And I think that this... And I think this seems quite interesting. This is a... I know MOBAs are a bit old-fashioned now, you know, but...
Well, they've turned their hand to most things. You've got, you know, the standard RPG fashion they've always done. But, you know, with the Pokemon Go remote thing, we'll do a MOBA version. They've got loads of card games. The Pokemon TCG is very well regarded and popular. So they can do what they like with it. And I'm waiting for the, you know, Mario-style kart racer. That'll appear at some point.
Yeah, sure. Pokemon Racer. That'd be great. I'm surprised they haven't done it.
I'll whack a Pikachu around a track.
That's it.
So they're classifying it as a mid-core MOBA. We are expecting it 24th of the series. 24th. Hang on, that's presents. I think that's the date it was aired, wasn't
it?
So I don't know when. It just says free to start, by the way, which is Nintendo's way of saying free to play without getting sued by angry parents. But I don't think they've got a concrete release date yet. But we'll keep you informed as we always do. When these things appear. Another thing that's also getting a mobile-centric release is Don't Starve. Now, we covered that like a few years ago when it came out. Obviously, it was appeared on PCs and that first. They got the mobile version over, which was very good. It's kind of a wilderness survival sim with a really nice, almost Tim Burton-y aesthetic. Lots of hand-drawn, big, bold outlines, art style, a bit creepy, a bit weird, crafty, survival-y business. Did very well. They've got a new version coming out called Don't Starve New Home, which apparently is a multiplayer spin-off that's been developed specifically for iOS. Now, the interesting thing that we noted in the article is that Klee, the developers, aren't involved in this one. And once again, the reins have been handed over to Tencent, but this time it's Tencent and Shenkuu Games who are dealing with it. But I'm interested to see how the multiplayer thing works in a survival game. Is it people running around trying to build the best base / tent or smashing down other people so that they can't survive? I'm not sure what the focus will be.
So they've done a co-op one on PC, which was Don't Starve Together.
Okay.
Which was quite enjoyable, actually, and certainly made it easier for people who struggled with the core game. But yeah, I'll admit I've not sat down and watched through the trailer yet and seen if it is like PvP or just cooperatively PvE. One thing of interest is that this is another one being published by Tencent, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
Is that Don't Starve is one of the success stories of games being ported to simplified Chinese.
Oh, right.
When that conversation comes up, basically, Don't Starve is one of the kind of go-to games where people are like, adapt it into simplified Chinese because that is a massive audience. And if you can get it over there and get it available to them, they might buy it. And Clay did, they did so well by just running it through translation. I think I saw stats where there were weeks where like 70% of their sales were coming from the Chinese market, which until they ported to simplified Chinese, that market just wasn't there.
Yikes. Yeah. I mean, we do a lot of stuff talking about the conferences again. We're always talking about the East versus West, yeah. How you bring Eastern games over to like a UK, European, US audience and vice versa. And so much of the industry is about like, how do we crack that? How do we make these games translate? And it's not as simple as just putting all your dialogue into Google Translate, hitting Chinese,
yep.
and then just there, done. Because it's so much more than just the words. A, you have to get proper translators to do it because loads of nuance gets lost. But also, the type of game it is, the UI, the colours that individual cultures respond to. Like, red means something very different to one culture versus what it does over here. And so you have to factor in all this stuff because you'll end up making your game say something you don't mean it to say.
Yeah.
And if you don't get it quite right.
And then all of a sudden the room doesn't look dangerous, it looks warming or something like that. And all of a sudden the villain doesn't look as much like a villain. And all of this stuff that you've got going on is suddenly not quite working. And so it's proper localization. Yeah. I'm not too sure about the depths that that Clay went to localize it, but they were definitely one of the people who got good translation in there. I don't know if they had much in the way of words in the game that actually needed translating. If I remember correctly, there wasn't, other than items being named, there wasn't actually too much going on in text.
Simple UI stuff.
An interesting note is that on Apple Arcade, which I know we'll get to later, in order to be on Apple Arcade, I think you need to have your game translated fully into 25 languages, including including Arabic and Korean, etc. And I speak regularly with the chaps, I think it's SJB, behind Tangle Tower. Mm-hmm. And because they had all of the translation work done just to be accepted onto Apple Arcade, when they released their Steam version, they had all 25 languages there and in place. And they got like some Let's Players in, I feel like it's Korea, I might be wrong, but either way, in one of the East Asian countries. And it got picked up by like two or three streamers. And so all of a sudden, they just had skyrocketed sales from over there, and they just had this unprecedented, unexpected success that just came from actually being localized properly in anticipation of release. So, because you can't strike gold if you're not mining in the right place.
No, and you can never underestimate like the fact that your game could have an international audience if you remember that they're there caters them accordingly. It's easier said than done because doing that stuff costs time and money. It's like not... Google Translate is a cheap option, which is why you see a lot of poorly translated games. But when you do it properly, you need to get proper translators in and pay them and consultants and people who work locally with UI and things like that. But yeah, if you do it, it can make a huge impact on the footprint of your game. And it's also just an interesting thing. Like, I always like those talks when we do them at the conferences because it's like there's loads of stuff in there every time that I don't know. Because I don't know intimately 24 different other cultures. We're all intimately familiar with our own, and that's how we kind of shape our worldview, but it always pays to have a look around. With this one, we are expecting it to go live. I'm going to guess this year, but at the minute they're doing a closed beta, which you can actually sign up and take part in. So if you want to go and check it out, we've got a link to the game's official site. So just go there and look for Don't Starve New Home. And you'll be get set a bunch of in-game challenges. It's open to US and Canadian players. You have to be 13 years old or over, but you can go and get involved and test the game out and be one of the first to give it a go if you want to. Out and about this week, we're going to start with something a bit Pokemon flavored, Pokemon Cafe Mix. This is a matching puzzler mixed with one of those food preparation games.
Yeah.
So the idea is you run a cafe, you got your little Pokemon working for you, you start out with your little Eevee, and someone comes in, they want a cappuccino, and in order to make the cappuccino, you have to prepare it yourself using little Pokemon icons, which are all in like a little vat. Imagine a coffee machine and a grinder, you know, it has the beans in one of them funnels like this. Imagine instead of it being filled with coffee beans, it's filled with little Pokemon faces, all different Pokemon there. And then you don't press the grind button and watch them all spurt to blood. That would be an interesting but different game. Here, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to drag your finger through and match them up in that classic sort of color matching way that a lot of match three puzzlers do. However, it reacts very differently. Yeah. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it. I've not played it, but I've seen probably half an hour, 40 minutes of it being played. And yeah, they jitter all over the place, don't they?
Yeah. So it's like you drag them through. Like you put your finger on one of them, on a little, you know, squirtle's face or whatever. And then you drag to try and mix up with the other squirtles. And they don't have to be literally next to each other. You can sort of, you push them through as if they are. You've grabbed hold of one in a big ball pit and you're smashing it through the other balls. And they kind of expand and pop around. So it's a big, like, almost like popcorn thing as you move it around. So it behaves very differently to a normal match three. But the idea is, instead of just like connecting them all, getting points and moving on, you have to get certain ingredients. So each Pokemon or each object represents a certain part of the ingredient to the thing you're making. So if you're doing a cappuccino or something, you might need to grab loads and loads and loads of Eevees, and then also motivate your speakers. So a little speaker or a megaphone will pop up in there and you have to factor that in and grab that. They have little special things that appear that I think speed everything up a little bit. And you can not only grab them and then factor those into your joins, you can also link them together to make even bigger ones that then explode through walls or partitions that you couldn't otherwise reach in order to make stuff. I've had some quite fun experiences with the little food making prep games. I quite like the stress of it.
Yeah.
From a Cooking Mama or from... no, I'm not thinking of Cooking Mama. What am I thinking of? Overcooked. That's great for, you know, making your friends hate you.
Cook Serve Delicious is my go-to.
Is that your one?
Yeah, okay. I think Cook Serve Delicious is absolutely fantastic and everybody should play that and they should release the new ones on mobile as well. But yeah.
I can see you're a diehard. Well, I was initially disappointed when I fired it up and I realized, and the screen appeared and I was like, oh, it's a match three. Ah. But it's not. It is different. And the presentation is through the roof. It's a gorgeous looking thing. Like, I'd almost like it to be an RPG just so I could hang out with those characters that look like that. It's so, like, that pastel 2D style. It's so good looking. But I've done about half an hour. It's, you know, it's going to be light, but there is more to it than I initially thought, which is good. We'll have to wait and see about reviews and stuff and how the free-to-play works, whether it starts to sting you. But it could work. I wasn't appalled or anything. So you can go get that right now. That's free to download iPhone and iPad and Android at the minute. Pokemon Cafe Mix is the name of that one. We'll cover Pascal's Wager. This came out on iOS a while back, and we did plenty on it. This is the definitely not Dark Souls game that came out and was probably the best of the definitely not Dark Souls games that have appeared.
Yeah.
It does a fairly good job of it, and we were broadly positive about it. We've had we've had updates since. They've taken it very seriously. It's a premium game. It was released about £6 or £7. And your man, the developer behind it, has followed up and released, you know, DLC that you can get for free. And there's been a lot of good aftercare on the game as well. It is now available on Android.
Yes.
You can play the new Game Plus version. The expansion is called Deep Into the Dark Mist. That's currently available at the minute. Did you get a chance to have a go on this one?
I've not given it a go. I am quite trepidatious when it comes to Souls-like games. I threw myself really hard into Demon's Souls back on the PS3.
Right.
And that I didn't have the little book that came with it that said, mm-hmm. like, we advise you go through this way. So there was a lot of learning and a lot of resentment and a lot of distrust.
Bitterness. Yeah. Recrimination.
Yeah. And
counselling.
And then I did try the Dark Souls series. I got along really well with The Surge, which was a twist on it.
Xbox One, wasn't it? The futuristic one.
But yeah, I haven't tried out Pascal's Wager yet.
Okay, well, this is a lot easier, if only because they've had to streamline the controls and everything. But there is still an element of tactics. It works about as well as can be expected, if you know what I mean, for this kind of thing. They're never going to recreate the experience because it's kind of impossible, but it does a pretty good job. We've got the stats list, so the minimum you need is a Snapdragon 625 and 3GB of RAM in order to run this, because it is a big 3D affair. It does look pretty... you know, good, pretty Dark Souls-y. And currently, the launch time discount is $3.99 or £3.99. It'll probably be around double that when it's full price. So if you've been hankering for this one and you already know you want it, maybe go ahead and grab now. If not, if you're on the fence, go and check out our reviews and everything else, because we've been covering it and the updates in full. Now, I don't think either of us have played this, but Death Come True...
I've not played it, no.
No.
No, I've read a couple of reviews already because a couple of people broke embargo and got stuff out yesterday. And I've seen some reviews on the back end of the site. Our Pocket Gamer one went live this morning, actually, which is quite different than the one that Campbell's put up over on 1-4-8 Apps. So,
really?
Yes.
We've got our contrasting opinions.
Yeah,
that's good.
We've got like a 4 and an 8. So,
wow.
That was interesting
to
read through. Yeah, so...
I think it'll be divisive, though, because this is the new thing from the guy behind Danganronpa.
Yes, yeah.
Which is obviously why people were kind of, ooh, and pay attention. But what he's done here is, rather than it being a kind of anime-style game, it's a full FMV, like classic, like it's a movie that's been shot, and then you're making decisions and choosing where it goes. But it is another group of teens or group of characters locked in, or it's in a hotel by the look of it. FMV thriller, and the idea is who's doing weird things, who's done murders, all that kind of stuff, which itself is very Danganronpa.
Yeah.
But real actors and really shot. And as you say, Campbell was quite pro it.
Yeah.
Cameron, not so much.
The thing is, Cameron's got, like yourself, and I guess a little bit like myself, he's got a little bit of a background in video and in film. I don't know about if your background ties over there, but I did media studies and film studies when I was at college before entering the wonderful world of writing. And I know that Cameron did similar as well. And so I guess looking at it from a movie maker angle, it might be underwhelming. I mean, FMV games are notoriously the best ones are really campy and pulpy, and there's stuff wrong. Like the other year, there was Contradiction came out. I don't know if you've played that, but Contradiction.
I didn't play it, but I saw the videos.
Fantastic. So good.
For being goofy and daft.
Yeah, and this... Mm. Do you know what this means? But yeah, so maybe on that level, for some people, it will be a disappointment. And for other people who expected something like Danganronpa, maybe, you know, it could go either way. So what we may have is a situation where Campbell's appreciating it for its... campiness,
for its
or
weird weaknesses, or what you might perceive as a weakness.
That's it. Well, Cameron's saying, could do this better with two of my mates.
Which is kind of what he says. So his idea is like he wasn't expecting the full Friday the 13th level goofiness, as he says, but of like there are different failure states you can get from playing through the game multiple times. And obviously, he did go through it a bunch of times to see what decisions changed what. But he says, like, it's really flat. It seems to be trying to be campy and tongue-in-cheek, but doesn't work. And at the same time, it's also trying to be a violent thriller and take itself seriously. And those two things, they haven't pulled off the balance right, which is a difficult thing to manage anyway. But it just ends up being, like, as he says, a thriller devoid of tension and a comedy lacking in laughs and a mystery that's unlikely to elicit more than a shrug.
Sounds like he likes it.
Damning stuff. But, like I say, Campbell over on 1-4-8 Apps, he liked it. And I think he sees that stuff as that's the fun of it. It's daft and silly, and it's kind of supposed to be because these games always are. So maybe you get from it what you bring to it. Either way, it is out at the moment. We have to be very careful with what video we post because they are restricting what you can show in the videos. Perhaps understandably, because in an FMV game, literally the video is the game. So if you just show it all, maybe you might as well not buy it ever. But either way, that is currently available right now. It is iOS and Android and Switch. I think they're all out at the same time. It's definitely available for all of them at some point. You can get that right now. And it does cost money. I can't work out exactly how much. The link isn't working. But find out. Do some Googling. You'll get there. You've been playing something, Dan, that I have been nowhere near.
I've been playing...
Crying Suns?
Crying Suns, yes.
Right. What is this?
Suns like the big stars, not suns like, yes, Mal Children.
The things that disappoint you and smash up your best crockery, yeah.
Crying Suns, I've played it extensively on PC, actually, previously, because it went through Kickstarter, okay. I think, probably a few years back. But what it is they've taken the FTL formula of travelling from point to point. They've laced a story through it about a fallen empire and, you know, robots that were keeping society going that have all been cut off and human nature being the worst thing of everything. And they've...
and, that's me, they're talking about me.
Yeah. this is an intervention, James.
About time. Where the hell have you been?
And they've added just a really nice combat overlay to it. So you have kind of one ship at the top, one ship at the bottom, and then there's like a hex-based grid in the middle that's pausable real-time. And you've got kind of different types of ships that you can send out to fight, and your ships can use the weapons as well. So you might deploy drones that are good against frigates or fighters that are good against drones, vice versa. And there's a couple of other things in there too. You've got lieutenant kind of hero characters that you can assign to your ship that improve it in certain ways. You can also go down to the surface of planets and do expeditions, but there's always dangers. You know, your your lieutenants have different skills, like some might be good at subterfuge, some might be good at explosions, and there's these little challenges and checks, and you could lose the lieutenant, basically, or you could lose your soldiers that you're sending down to the ground. And all the way through this, there's also events and more bits of the story being unraveled, and it's just a really, really great feeling, I guess, space opera RPG strategy game. It's just a lot of things.
It looks like an interesting mixture, because I'm seeing gameplay of it now. The UI is the most FTL-y thing.
Yeah.
Like, I really recognize the sidebars and moving the characters around, but instead of it being a cross-section of a ship and that's what you're managing, you've actually got like a star map, hex-based star map, and then you're moving folks around on that. But I want to press those buttons, Dan.
It's really good.
They look inviting.
You should download it. I actually think these are strong words, but I actually think that this is better on... I've been playing it on iPad. I think this is better on mobile than it was on PC. Because
that
of the way
that happened with FTL.
The UI works, you know, and just everything's there. And they've done a great job with the controls as well. So, like, you can just tap to get information or you can hold to select. And it just feels better than double clicks. And I played, or I reviewed a week or 2 weeks ago, Slay the Spire. And my main complaints about the port were that the actual user interface didn't feel right. There were times where you'd misclick or you'd click something and it would just select it and you didn't have a confirm menu. This really feels like they've looked at it and they've gone, how can we make sure nobody does anything by mistake?
Mm.
You know, everything feels, you know, really solid.
Well, FTL worked. It was a brilliant iPad game.
Yeah.
That's where I played it. I did have it on PC as well. But when it came over to iPad, it was, you know, it kind of took over. That's where I play, because it was a perfect just sit on the sofa and do. And it felt really comfortable, especially when you're just navigating, like opening doors and things on the ship.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And like it's great for just do. Plus, you feel like you're, you know, on the bridge of the Enterprise. You know, that's what I'm looking for here.
Vent the engineer.
Exactly. Yeah. So this looks like it's shooting from that kind of camp. And it's going to be, or it is, premium game. So $8.99, £8.99. And it is out today, all being well. You can find it, say, iPhone and iPad and Android if you want to get them. So it's covering the whole gamut, unlike FTL, which was iPad only for the longest time. I think maybe still is. So go and have a look at that one. The Innsmouth Case is now out. Haven't played this. This only just appeared on the joint account thing that we have. But this is the narrative Cthulhu-inspired, I guess, book, interactive book-style game. But I think there's a bit of RPG in there and a little bit of comedy. It's trying to take a lighter tone with the whole Cthulhu mythos thing. So yes, you're in Innsmouth, and anyone who's done anything related to Cthulhu knows about Innsmouth. But you're dealing with the weird characters, miscreants, and creatures which are lurking around there. But it's done in this quite sort of sweet cartoony style. Talking to folks and doing investigations and all that business. Nice presentation. Haven't played it. Can't comment. But App Store and Google Play, $4.99 or £4.99. I think it's also out on Steam.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're a PC guy, you can go get that there as well. But worth a look, perhaps. Very briefly, the Academy First Riddle. We mentioned this a while back, and this is a kind of not quite Harry Potter, but it is a kids at a school filled with mystery and strange goings on, and you must investigate as a pupil, and all magic and all that kind of stuff. But done in a 3D wander around style, and based particularly on the puzzles. This is a puzzle game. This is not that sort of, I keep forgetting what's called, Hogwarts Mystery.
Yes, yeah.
Was that one, which was more talking to people and just like, I don't know, talk to them and you'll get some points, that kind of thing. That's not what this is. This is a legit like go around puzzle box adventure kind of thing, which is okay from what we've reported, but I think, according to Cameron, if there's one thing that lets it down, it's the controls. You get real hassle with the virtual sticks and just navigating between points and choosing the right thing, getting the camera to point the right way isn't great. And I think the puzzles are a little bit up and down, where some of them will be, you know, really interesting and clever. Other are finicky and a bit weird or too easy and don't work. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but still, you know, I think it's about a 6 out of 10 kind of affair.
Yeah, if they added controller support, I think he said, which it has launched on platforms that use controllers or is launching on platforms that use controllers. He said that if that was in there, then his control issues would certainly be alleviated. But
Okay. And I think this is supposed to be the first installment of several. Hence the first riddle. So we'll see if maybe they make adjustments if there's a sequel that appears. We'll have to see. What else have we got? Oh, the Almost Gone, that appeared. This we got a little exclusive video of this up and running. This is one I would like to try, because this, speaking about like mysteries and puzzle boxes and that kind of thing, this is like a game where you're exploring different houses, buildings, and rooms by tapping and interacting with them, but they're presented in isometric style, literally just the room floating in space, and then you can like rotate it and spin it around in that Monument Valley style, so you can just and see, and then when you want to move to a different room, you can kind of swipe and it, that room disappears and the room next to it appears in its place, and then you go close up and into objects and start interacting, like there's a globe on a table, so you tap that and the globe goes full screen and you can spin it and look for your clues. Really pretty.
Yeah.
Like that pastel diorama thing is done absolutely beautifully. And as you're doing it, you're getting text pop up explaining the objects, but also revealing the backstory, because this is a mystery. And it's actually comes from the guy called, I'm going to mess this up, Juice van der Kasteel, let's say, who is an author, an award-winning author. And so that's kind of what it's based around. And you're investigating homes, streets. There's a hospital in there. You're trying to uncover clues and memories from the objects and piece together what the hell happened. Love the look of this one. Cameron was pretty positive about it with his little hands-on preview. So I'd like to give it a go if it's on the account. Probably
it is. I've played a little bit of it. I really enjoy the rotating, sliding around the house. Controls that you can zoom in on certain things. There's little it's almost 100% environmental storytelling. There's a little bit of the narrator chipping in on things, which increases and decreases as it goes through. It's a sad story, but it's a very interesting puzzle game.
Well, I'll definitely give it a go then. So this is a $3.99 or £3.99 game you can get for both the App Store and from Google Play. At the minute, The Almost Gone is the full title of that one. I think there are more games that came out this week. It's been a really busy one, but yeah, I know you have to fly, so we'll call it there. Go over to Pokegamer.com, check out all the new releases and the articles that appear. We'll also have our 5 best games of the week, which we do both on the site in article form and I do in video form over on the YouTube channel on a Friday. So go and check that out if you need your weekly recommendations. And obviously, make sure you bookmark PG and subscribe to the YouTube channel, because that's the thing that I should say more often than I do. Dan, thank you so much for joining me.
No problem. Pleasure.
Fantastic. And everybody, thank you for watching, whether on YouTube or via your headphones in usual podcast form. We wouldn't do it if it wasn't for you. And we will hopefully see you all next week for more of the same. Bye-bye.
Bye.